And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Now we had an extra day this weekend, so I hope you got some extra rest in, relaxed a little bit with family and friends. Got to church on Sunday and had a wonderful time at worship service. And I hope more and more churches are opening up because the more I read and study and research the statistics and listen to the reports, the less reason I see for the continued hysteria and lockdown that we are witnessing in some of these jurisdictions. I mean, at this point, I think New York has a less than 1% death rate of those who contract it, and they still have all the restaurants basically about to close for the winter. This is just ridiculous. This is completely out of step with what we now know about this thing. And it is really time, in my view, to begin to open this economy up. And as I've said before, focus on the people with the comorbidities and protecting the vulnerable as opposed to trying to have the whole country in a state of hysteria. But nevertheless, I trust that in spite of all the craziness that is going on, churches are opening up and you and your family are getting out and having a nice time and enjoying each other's company. Because I think the disease is real. I don't deny its reality, but I think that its ability to do harm has been completely overblown, particularly if you take certain just basic hygienic steps to try to minimize transmission of the thing. And then even then, the people who are really in danger when they get it are people with significant numbers, not just one comorbidity, but as we saw, 94%, according to the CDC, of those who pass away from it have 2.6 additional comorbidities. In other words, they don't just have coronavirus. They've got other significant life-threatening diseases. I mean, that's important information to know, to understand, to keep this thing in perspective. So at any rate, I hope you all had a good time. And I'm excited about September because I am declaring me, little old me, right? I am declaring, you're right, who cares? But I have been doing this, believe it or not, since 2011. It's just that nobody's been listening. So now you all are listening. But since 2011, I've been declaring September American History Month because I believe that just as we have various months to celebrate, and I won't go through the list, but various months to celebrate various things, some of which I think need to be thrown out, but nevertheless, we are being taught a polemic, a Howard Zinn lie about American history, and it's time we began. In fact, I don't call it American History Month, I call it Celebrate American History Month. It's about time we began to celebrate our illustrious history as a nation. And so I'm going to use this month from time to time to share a little tidbit of history with you, something that I've learned along the way that I think maybe most people haven't heard, because I find in American history so much to be gratified about and so much to be proud of and so much to be inspired by, as opposed to these people running around now trying to destroy our history and trying to censor our history and trying to turn our history into something that it's not, that we're a monstrous nation, we're sexist, we're racist, we're white supremacists, that's all a load of garbage, frankly, folks. That's all it is. It's just nothing more than that. How Karl Marx and his ilk and Antonio Gramsci and some of these these folks who have been way out on the left in the Marxist, socialist, communist sphere, Saul Alinsky, have convinced Americans to hate their own country, I think is going to go down as one of the most interesting studies in American history. I trust the day will come we'll look back on this and say it's interesting at how we managed to turn our history into a reason to hate our country. And many people were convinced to do just that, to hate the country they live in, they were born in, they enjoy freedom in, they have opportunity in, but they've been taught to hate it. Well, I believe we need to celebrate American history because there's plenty to love. And I do love the United States of America. I love our country. And I am not ashamed or I'm not apologizing for that. I'm very proud of that because I think that's the way every American ought to feel about our country. The American flag is not a symbol of Republicanism or a symbol of conservatism. The American flag is a symbol of the United States of America. It ought to be a unifying symbol for us all, regardless of what our political persuasion might be. The national anthem should be something that we all respect because it symbolizes our entire nation. And trying to pick two little words out of the national anthem and declare that it's a racist anthem is just this stuff is so preposterous that it really belongs in an insane asylum. It really does. The people who buy into this stuff need to be treated. They really do because it's a kind of obsessive compulsive disorder. But at any rate, here's just a little tidbit. You know, I've been recently reading the biography of Benjamin Franklin, and I didn't know that, among other things, Benjamin Franklin is responsible really for the development of the modern meteorology system, because he was the first one to begin to, in America at least, to begin to make a study of weather patterns and how the weather moved. And for example, he discovered that the nor'easter, which people thought came from the northeast because the winds tend to blow in from the northeast, he thought the nor'easter came from the northeast, but he began to observe and he learned that while the winds blow from the northeast, the storms themselves come from the south. And he did that by observing, communicating with people up and down the coast about storm patterns. And when a storm, for example, would hit Philadelphia versus when it would hit New York or when it would hit Boston, and he became to realize that the storms were hitting Philadelphia first and then moving up the coast. And he began to actually study weather patterns and was the first person really in America to make a study of, you know, can you predict weather patterns? To what extent can you predict the weather? And he found, yeah, well, actually, it's somewhat predictable in terms of the movement of storms. So he was a Renaissance man. This man was a writer, a scientist, a statesman, a scholar, even though he was self-taught because, you know, he had an opportunity to go to Harvard. It didn't work out for him. So he was completely self-taught. He did not have a college degree, yet started the University of Pennsylvania. I mean, this assemblage of these people, I mean, these were some absolutely astounding people when you think about it. But here's perhaps the most interesting thing. You know, this Washington, D.C. group that's talking about taking down the statues and the monuments and all that, and they're saying, Ben Franklin is a person of concern. He's a person of concern. It's because he has some things in his background that give us concern. Well, look, Ben Franklin, like every other person of his time probably, began thinking that, well, you know, black people are enslaved because that's kind of their natural place, and that's where life has put them. Or Ben Franklin was a classic believer in scripture as we understand it, but, you know, some people would have said, well, that's where God put them and so forth. But he started a school to help educate black children. And he writes, this is back in the early 1700s, he writes that he found that these children have the same level of intellect, the same memory, the same capability that any other child he's ever encountered. And he began to revise his theories. Like every other human being, he grew. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Should professional basketball players be allowed to boycott their games? Well, of course. Current NBA players, along with players in the past, have used the forum to address social issues. Technically, the decision last month was probably best described as a strike rather than a boycott, and it led to many other professional teams canceling their games as well. In a well-written and thoughtful piece, Andrew McCarthy argues that the action may be somewhat illogical, but certainly allowable. He says for a work stoppage to be successful, it has to withhold something the potential consumer wants. As he puts it, the sand is running out of the hourglass. Now, most spectators turn to sports to get away from politics and politicized issues, at least for a few hours. And it has been, in the past, an oasis from the turmoil, but that oasis is beginning to disappear. Much of it surfaced over the Star Spangled Banner, which wasn't even the national anthem until 1931, and it wasn't even routinely played before sporting events until World War II. He says he wishes that patriotic displays were not controversial, but fine. If playing the anthem sullies the experience for a sizable number of fans, let's not do it. But the biggest issue is whether we should allow protest at the game. The owners and the NBA have decided to indulge the behavior for now. The players are free to kneel before the game or even boycott the game. But you know what? The spectators are also free to boycott the league and tune them out. Freedom works both ways. McCarthy says he loves sports, but sporting events are just one of many things he enjoys. During this playoff run, the NBA players are in a bubble because of the pandemic. That means they play to lots of empty seats. But if they keep up this behavior, they will be playing to lots of empty seats next year. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For more information about issues covered on Viewpoints, visit pointofview.net. Pointofview.net.
This is 60 Seconds with America's Altar. Come and present your heart to the Lord. How do we win the heart of mankind to Jesus Christ? Patience. In your patience, possess your soul, Luke 21:19. A lot of times we get just absolutely impatient and we get frustrated. Well, do you not know that there's no need to when we are trusting God to lead and direct our path? The harvest is so ripe, there's no need to be impatient. Let your smile shine forth. Don't be anxious. Simply let the love of God that's in you come out of you as you look at those before you.
This has been a soul-winning moment with William Owens, evangelist, author, and poet. Come and present your heart to the Lord. Learn more at americasaltar.org. That's americasaltar.org.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And we're back. Speaking of American history, one of the themes that I want to hit, and I want to start that today, is the nature of our Constitution. Because as you all know, the Constitution has also been vilified and disparaged, and it's a racist document, this, that, and the other. The fact of the matter is that the Constitution of the United States is the fairest and most stable and frankly, in my view, now this is just my opinion, others may have a different view, but I think the most brilliant governing document that mankind has ever devised. And I'd say that the proof of the truth of what I've just said is in the fact that it has lasted us now for, I think, 233 years. I think it'll be 233 years on September 17th. You don't last that long if there's not something awfully good about the nature of the design, right? It just, things don't last for 233 years by accident. And so I think it is a brilliant governing document. And yet, sadly, I think it is one that the left is trying to separate from the American people, separate from our awareness, separate from our consciousness. By the way, let me mention, on September the 17th, that's only, oh my goodness, what is that? Nine days from today. Because today is the 8th, I think, isn't it? Yes. Today is the 8th. That's 9 days from today, we're going to have a Constitution read-in I say we, my nonprofit, Stand, Staying True to America's National Destiny, is going to have a Constitution read-in from 2 to 5 Eastern Time, in which we're going to read through the entire Constitution of the United States. Now, that's going to take a while to do. We're going to have different people reading along the way. We're going to have some commentators commenting about various aspects of the Constitution and why those things are in the Constitution and what they mean. But one of the principles that I think has allowed the Constitution to endure, one of its principles, is the idea, allowed the Constitution to endure in preserving our freedom. That's an important addition to that comment. Allowed the Constitution to endure in preserving our freedom is the fact that it was developed on an entirely different theory than any other governing institution ever had been in the history of mankind. And the theory was this, that government should be limited in its ability so that people can be free. The more you limit government to its essential responsibilities, the more people are free to make their own decisions and to guide their own lives without coming under the control or the heavy-handed direction and restraints and limitations of an overweening government. Folks, that's unique in human history. And so we believe in the doctrine of limited and enumerated powers, okay? Limited and enumerated powers, meaning that the government has the ability and the power and the right to do only what the Constitution gives it the right to do and nothing else. Now, I believe that that's been violated quite a bit over the last 233 years. But we nevertheless hark back to it again and again every time we feel that government oversteps its bounds to say, hey, wait a minute, government. That's not within your bounds. That's not within your right. I'm sure you all heard about the report from the FISA court that indicated that I forget the exact number, thousands of these warrantless wiretaps and searches, only seven, according to a court study, seven were justified. Now, we've been raising these questions about the FISA court and about its secrecy and about its power and about its abuse. Now, for a number of years, of course, this came into bold relief in its abuse against then-candidate Trump, being used to try to spy on him, frankly, ultimately, in my view, being used to try to overthrow a legitimately elected president. That's really what the game was. That was the insurance. That was the drop back. So that if we don't manage to defeat him at the ballot box, which shouldn't be a problem, right? There's a 96% chance that Hillary Clinton's going to win. But if by some strange event he gets elected, this is our insurance to drive him from office. We will show that he is in effect a spy for the Russian government. Even saying that just sounds so ridiculous that it just defies any kind of human logic to say something, to think something, and to spend not only that, to spend about $35 million of taxpayer money, not to mention the number of hours spent preoccupied with a hoax. Because, and part of our critique of that is, wait a minute, government, wait a minute. We are a constitutional republic. You don't have a right to violate the privacy of the American people for what you think are good ends. You don't have the right to do that. There is a process that must be gone through to prove that something is at stake so serious, or what the constitutional scholars call a compelling state interest, and then it has to be signed off on by a judge. And then what happens? You get government people who lie, who just basically mislead the court and get the court to do things it should not and would not in the normal case do. And that's unconstitutional behavior. So look, that's happened throughout our history, but the Constitution itself endures. and keeps calling us back to this idea that, yeah, but you can't do that, government. You can't do that. And right now, folks, I just see the Democrat Party has just gone unconstitutionally crazy. I don't even know if that's an adverb, but I just made one up. Okay, you know. Talk shows get to make up adverbs, you know. Unconstitutionally crazy. But you get my point. I mean, they are just trampling the Constitution left and right, it seems. I mean, this latest controversy on this whole FISA court deal is just one thing. But I mean, look at New York right now, the governor and the mayor. And think about this. What right do you have, barring extraordinary circumstances and data that backs up those circumstances, facts, information, science, and they don't have it on their side anymore because the COVID scare is proving now to no longer be justified. But they've got all the restaurants locked down. They've got all the theaters locked down. They basically got the economy of New York City locked down. I know there are a lot of liberals in New York, but my goodness, even they have got to have some common sense to say, hey, wait a minute, something's not right here. Something is not right. This is government overreach. Government doesn't have a right to tell a small business person that can read the data themselves and can manage their own affairs to say, well, we're not letting you do business. Excuse me? Yeah, we, the government, are not letting you do business. Well, how do you get the right to tell me I can't? Well, there's an emergency. Yeah, but you don't just get to declare an emergency without facts to back it up. You don't just get to say there's an emergency and therefore I control you. And frankly, folks, they simply don't have the data to back up what they're doing now. And all outside of New York City, all over the state of New York, counties, towns are easing restrictions because they realize that it is time to open the economy up and that the danger for most people is very, very small and people have to live. They have to work. They have to go on with their lives. But no, not in New York City. What is the point? I think one point is they just love power. I think this governor does, this mayor does, they just love power. They love exercising power over people. I think the other thing is they think they're going to hurt the president. They think this is going to just cause President Trump to be looked upon as the person who killed the economy of New York City, which is another point I've made again and again. These folks don't care about people. I wish I were wrong about that. I wish that weren't true. I really do. I'd love to think that every American, even if they are ideologically opposed to my point of view, still cares enough about people to want to do what's right and to want to treat people properly. But when power is your God, then people are merely pawns in the game. And so putting people out of business, who cares? Like Mao said, which one of their favorite philosophers, right? If you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. You've got, I'm sure you've heard this now, apparently, particularly in San Francisco, where you've got gyms closed. And in other places, you've got gyms closed. But the gyms in government buildings are open. So if you work for the government, you can go to the gym. But if you don't work for the government, the gym is closed. See, that's an abuse of power. That's unconstitutional. You can't do that. And what that tells you is that they're not concerned about COVID infections. This is about a political agenda. And there are some other instances of this, which I want to bring up. And then I'm going to start taking your calls. The number is 888-589-8840. Great month to talk about these constitutional issues, since this is the month. September 17th is the day the Constitution was first passed and then went on to the states to be ratified. Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Politics, the Christian's responsibility. You know, that's a subject that is certainly relevant, but one that has been ignored by many long and often. Because, you see, the Christian does have some political responsibility. To begin with, the Christian has a responsibility not to accept the common belief that politics is a crooked business without doing something to correct it. Too long we have accepted politics as being inherently evil. For years I have been informed that politics is a crooked business and that its crookedness was to be accepted. Politics does not have to be crooked. It is not crooked even by nature. Whatever is crooked about politics is so partly because we have allowed it. As Christians, we have a responsibility to make government as honest and fair and efficient as it can be. Not only that, but the Christian has a responsibility of recognizing elected officials as humans capable of making mistakes. No person is infallible. And simply because an official makes a mistake, or even more than one mistake, doesn't automatically make him a crooked politician. And remember that no person or groups of persons can solve everybody's problems. Still another responsibility of the Christian is to be involved in the political process. All that is necessary for the triumph of evil, wrote Edmund Burke, is that good men do nothing. In many elections, if not in most elections, less than 50% of the qualified voters even bother to vote. Too often we have divorced Christian commitment from social, political responsibility. Separation of church and state does not mean separation of Christian faith and civic responsibility. God so loved the world, not just the church, but the world. As Christians, it is our responsibility not to be concerned with what's best for me, but what is best for our city, our state, our nation. We have an obligation to support principles rather than prejudices. Many times we have criticized without contributing. I'm reminded of the man I visited once who told me everything that was wrong with the church. The only problem was that he had not been inside a church in 20 years. Sometimes we're that way with politics. In the past 2 years, how many of us have contributed $1 or 1 hour to a good cause or a good candidate? How many of us even bothered to vote in the last election? The church has been terribly slow to recognize the responsibility of individual Christians to be involved in the political process. If anything, the emphasis has been for the Christians to stay clear of the crooked world of politics. The Christian has a responsibility to use his Christian commitment for social good. How? Well, for one thing, by encouraging and supporting good candidates in order to have better officials. We must have better candidates. I remember hearing a lecturer say once that a person's private moral life did not affect his ability to serve a public office. As I listened, I wanted to tell him that he was wrong, but I knew I could never convince him of the fact. However, we are beginning to see now quite clearly that personal moral standards do affect a person's ability to serve in public office. As Christians, we do have responsibilities in the area of politics. How well we fulfill those responsibilities will determine the type of government we will have from the local precinct to the national level.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
The number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. Folks, on September 22nd, that's a Tuesday evening at 7 p.m., I'm going to be speaking at the Faith Center in Fort Myers at 17650 South Tommy. What is that? Tamiami Trail? Wow. Okay. I guess it's either Tamiami or Ta Miami, but something like that, 17650 South Tamiami Trail. And I've been invited there by the Reverend Paul Lodato, who runs CTN Television Network and Florida Pastors Network. Looking forward to it. My good friend Bill Federer is going to be there, and a number of others as well. So we're going to have a great time in the Lord. It is open to the public. They're following proper protocols, but anybody who wants to come, feel free to come. And if you show up as a listener to the program, please make sure you get to me and say hello, because I'd love to hear from you. One of the most gratifying things that happens when I travel is for people to come up and say, hey, I listen to AFR, I listen to you on the radio. I love hearing that, and I really get a chance to meet you all. So I've had people say to me, you know, now I get to put a face with the voice, and the same is true for you. I get to put a face with the audience, you know. So by all means, come up and say hello if you happen to make it. That's Healing Our Nation, Tuesday, September 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Faith Center, Fort Myers, 17650 South Tamiami Trail. Now, look. This is Constitution Month. This is Celebrate American History Month, as far as I'm concerned. And this is a great time to remember that the design of our Constitution is intended to limit government's power over individuals. And that is just being trampled all over the place. You know, I said, now here's Nancy Pelosi. She's out getting her hair done. She's in her salon. No problem, except the other people can't do it. And all the city gyms are open, but the public gyms, that is the gyms that are privately owned that service the public, are not open. And I'm sure you all heard about this one. In Colorado, this 12-year-old kid was suspended for 5 days because during a virtual class. Now, he's at home now, because people say during a virtual classroom, and it sounds like he's in some place where there are other people around. No, he is at home with his mother's there. I think it's a mother and father in the home, but I think his mother's there. His father's not. But he's at home, and somewhere in the course of them videotaping him, which they're not supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be live streaming to him, but apparently they're videotaping him as well, which the mother did not know. He takes a plastic gun, a plastic toy gun that he uses in some video game stuff that he does on zombie hunting, and he shows a whole collection of these weird-looking, spaceship-looking orange and green and blue and red, you know, zombie killers or whatever they are. And he happens to pass that on the screen. He did not. There's no allegation he pointed the gun. There's no allegation he threatened anybody. There's no allegation he said, I've got a gun, I'm going to shoot you. They just happened to see the gun. Apparently, he moved it from one spot to another spot, and it was seen as he did that. Now, the school did not call his mother. They did not call his mother. They called the authorities. And a few hours later, the authorities show up at his home to give him a lecture about how this can lead to prison and this can lead to... Folks, this is the state trying to run people's lives. And you know, the weird thing about this just goes to show how indoctrination has taken root. Look, I grew up playing cops and robbers. I grew up, you know, with us shaping a gun with our hand or having a toy gun bought at the store and bam, 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 you know. I mean, cops and robbers, and yes, even cowboys and Indians, folks. And listen, I've got news for you. The cowboys didn't always win either. So, but you know, I grew up doing this stuff. We didn't become mass murderers. We didn't become killers as a result. I mean, it's just fun stuff that boys like to do. And suddenly this kid is suspended for 5 days, and the cops come out and give him a long lecture about how he could end up in prison. And the mother's there saying, what? You know, what? This is the state run amok. And I think this is why we really need to come to a point in our country where we really celebrate our history and celebrate our Constitution and talk about what it actually means, because I think most Americans don't have a clue. Most. You all do, because you listen to this network and you're probably reading other things that are in keeping with being informed about what our rights and responsibilities are under our constitutional system, under our constitutional republic. But most people, I think, don't have a clue, which is why when some government official says jump, most people say how high, because they think, well, he's the governor, he's the mayor. Yeah, but he's not the dictator. And he's not been given that kind of authority by the Constitution of the United States. He's a servant of the people, nothing more. Nothing more. And what status he has is status we, the people, have given him. Not something that he's taken unto himself to rule over us, but something that we have delegated to him as the sovereigns of this nation to serve us, to him or her, to serve us. And folks, we got to get back to these fundamental principles, because right now, these leftists have just got people completely hoodwinked. And to me, this is how you go from a constitutional republic of free people to a totalitarian system. You just forget along the way those little walls that are up to stop government from climbing over into our personal individual liberties and rights. And you just let it climb over once, and then they climb over again, and they climb over again. And before you know it, you don't have any freedom anymore. Okay, let's get to your calls before we have to go to a break, because I want to start here early. And let's go first to Jeff in Louisiana. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Bishop Jackson. I appreciate you letting me call in. So, yeah, I'm an attorney in Baton Rouge.
And oh, okay.
Two different clients that are fighting these governor's orders here. Fortunately, in Louisiana, we have even stronger protection of God-given rights than even the U.S. Constitution. In Louisiana, we have provisions in our state constitution that says that the state shall preserve our rights inviolate, which means obviously not to be mm-hmm. violated. And then even the governor's emergency act, under certain limited powers that the governor has given in emergencies, those rights are also, it's said that the governor has no right to diminish any constitutionally protected rights during the declaration of emergency. So we've got two suits going on right now. Pastor Tony Spell, I don't know if you heard of him.
I have, yes, of course.
He's been fighting since the beginning. And he stood up immediately and said, look, the government doesn't have the right to tell the church what to do in any circumstances. And Judge Roy Moore came down here, and I've been local counsel to him on that case. And we're still fighting that case with in federal court, both in federal court and in state court. He has to be arraigned on the state court charges against him for violating these orders later on this month. So, and then we have a case for a nice lady with a restaurant here, the Firehouse Barbecue, in Denham Springs, Louisiana, who's fighting the governor's orders about masking. And the way that the state has been winning these cases is talking about the seriousness of the virus, not the law, not the Constitution,
yeah,
not the
exactly.
limits of the government.
Hey, Jeff, I've got to go to a break, but listen, thank you so much. Keep up the good work. Call me again sometime, because I want to hear more about whether you think the people of Louisiana know that they've got even stronger protections. Back in a moment.
Run your dishwasher every night with Cascade Platinum. Alone with this few.
Cascade Platinum, a dishwasher detergent company, recently aired a new commercial where the actors stated they'd like to do it. Can you imagine the message this sends our kids? You can take action by signing the petition urging Cascade to remove its Do It Every Night commercial at 1millionmoms.com.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. Right now, our country is in trouble, and people are scared, people are afraid, and we see the violence and the injustices that are taking place. Only God can change this. This is a problem of the human heart.
If you'd like to pray with someone, call us any time of the day or night at 888-388-2683. 888-388-2683.
Call that number right now.
We've got someone who will pray with you, talk with you, encourage you. God bless.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management. I was finishing undergrad and got credit cards because I couldn't work full time. So that started the credit card journey for me.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
And then when I got married, we combined our credit card debt and it became impossible to pay off on our own. At that point, I was like, I don't know where to turn. And then I found Trinity.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief. I mean, in a matter of 3 years, we've already paid down $20,000 in credit card debt, which is huge.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
You know, it's true. Difficult times have a way of focusing us. We have to think about what matters most when it comes to our spending, our healthcare. No doubt, this is why so many people are joining MediShare right now. MediShare is a trusted way to save up to 50% on your monthly healthcare costs. More than 400,000 people have already made the switch. It's pretty obvious why, too, especially now during this challenging season with healthcare costs and out-of-pocket expenses going up. MediShare can save you a lot of money. The typical family saves $500 a month. And MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry that's worked beautifully for 27 years. There are different options to choose from to fit your budget. I'll give you the number here in a second. And if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Maybe now is the perfect time to make the switch and start saving. Here you go. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
There is a group calling Election Integrity that is urging Joe Biden not to accept the outcome of the election, no matter what the outcome is. In other words, unless he wins overwhelmingly, which is not going to happen, but not to accept it. In other words, if President Trump ends up with 300 electoral votes, 320, whatever it takes, don't accept it. Don't accept it. In other words, throw the nation into a constitutional crisis. Ignore the Constitution. Ignore the vote of the people. And just basically say, you're the next president. And this is what they're accusing President Trump of likely doing. But they are urging Joe Biden to precipitate a constitutional crisis by refusing to concede and declaring himself the winner no matter the outcome. Now, I don't know how far that's going to go, but that's what they're saying. Which, here again, what does that show? They don't care about what the people think. They don't care about how the people vote. They only care about their power. And as long as they get it, it doesn't matter how they get it. And that's exactly what the Constitution was intended to prevent. I'm going to share some things with you this month about some of the writings of George Washington about this whole issue of preserving our Constitution, because he had some concerns about it. We have to remember, this was brand new to them. And they understood that human beings can shred documents if they decide they just simply don't want to adhere to them. But just think about this, folks. The extraordinary nature of our country, and these people hate America, the extraordinary nature of our country is that overwhelmingly throughout our history, we have been held together by nothing but a piece of paper until you add the integrity of our people to that piece of paper, and then that piece of paper becomes a sacred document. Now just think about that for a second. Because people could have just said, we don't care what the Constitution says. But instead, we have agreed as a compact, as a covenanted nation, that no, we're going to honor the governing document to which we all submit ourselves willingly. It's absolutely extraordinary. And how people could hate this country is a testament to the level of indoctrination to which they've been subjected. Let's go back. Oh, and by the way, Jeff from Louisiana, I want to call us because I want to arrange to have you come on as a guest and talk about those cases down there, because those are important cases, and we need to be reminded of how the government has tried to trample the First Amendment rights, the economic rights of our citizens because this is Constitution Month, and what better time for us to be reminded of how important it is that we, the people, know what our rights are and are willing to stand up for them. So give us a call, Jeff, and give us your information, and we'll make arrangements. I'm not sure exactly when it will be, but we'll make arrangements to get you on to talk about those cases. Okay, let's come back to your calls. Let's go to Geneva in Arkansas. Geneva in Arkansas. Welcome.
Hello there, Brother Jackson.
Hello there, Sister Geneva.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
All right, I'm glad to have you on. What's on your mind?
Well, I stumbled onto your program probably a couple of months ago, but I tell you what, I've never been addicted to anything, but I am to your programs, and I don't listen to my country and Western anymore because I think I might miss something that you guys talk about, and I enjoy it so much, but I'm just an old country girl, and I was just thinking about what you're talking about, our Constitution and defunding the police and stuff, and I would just, I know that it wouldn't be happening, but if they could give all of these people that hates the Constitution and hates this here country, give them a one-way ticket to any country they want to go to, but a stipulation would be say, you cannot come back. And the ones that wants to defund the police and stuff like that, well, if the police would go ahead and take a vacation for about a month or two, the people would be screaming, who's going to come and help me, you know? We might have to go back to the cowboy and Indian days that you're talking about, but with them real guns,
well,
you know, the people would stop their crying and whining and stuff like that. I mean, God gave us this country, I feel, and we need to stand up for it and stop being like a bunch of little old 2 or 3 year olds a fussing and a fighting over something, you know.
But amen. Amen. Well, listen, I'll tell you what, Geneva, for a little old country girl, you got a lot of country wisdom there, and I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for it, Geneva. God bless you. Okay, let's keep going here because so many of you have been waiting for quite a while. So let's get to Wiley in Mississippi. Wiley, welcome.
Yeah, Bishop, I just wanted to comment. You know, two things real quick, and I'll hang up. They keep trying to compare this phony pandemic to 1918. Well, the world population is four times what it was in 1918. And in 1918, you had somewhere around 150 million people that died. So we would have to have 600 million people dead worldwide before you could even begin to compare it to 1918. Then, point number two, you had a lady come on there last week talking about that guy they killed up there in the snow, Floyd Finnegan. And it sounded like you wasn't aware of who she was talking about, but that's the guy that they was running them ranchers off their land up there. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the land that Hillary Clinton had sold to Russia, or sold the uranium rights to Russia off of, is the reason they was removing those ranchers off the land. But the FBI and the Obama administration murdered Floyd Finnegan, unarmed man, up there in the snow. I don't know if you was aware that that's the situation she was talking about or not. But
I did not. No, I was not aware. I did not remember his name, but I do remember that situation. And wow, that's so. Here again, that's another indication of how. Well, look, Waco was another situation. I didn't agree with David Koresh. I thought David Koresh was nuts. But I thought it was a tremendous overreach of the government to go in there and end up killing all those children and all those people, when I think there could have been a resolution of that without all that bloodshed, even though I think that, you know, David Koresh was indeed crazy. But still, so I appreciate that. Thank you so much for the call there, Wiley. Yeah, appreciate that very much. Appreciate you for reminding us of that. The population difference between now and 18, because frankly, I had not thought about that, but you're absolutely right. I mean, you can't even compare the numbers based upon the number of people that are in the earth today compared to the numbers that there were on the earth in 1918. So as always, my listeners are brilliant. So thank you. Let's see. Let's go to Mike in Kentucky. Mike, welcome.
Hey, well, there's a little bit of a delay here. I was, yeah, of course, I'm calling from the town of Kim Davis. They gave Rand Paul just all kinds of grief because he was in the workout gym for the Congress after he had been tested and hadn't got the test back yet. I don't know if you remember that, but they really gave him all kinds of grief. I sent him a letter after somebody called on my behalf, and I sent it, I think, return receipt requested, and I sent Mr. McConnell a letter, sent Hal Rogers a letter. Never heard a thing back. Called their people, never heard a thing back. But I was sitting here last June the 9th, and I've had several other incidents like this, and a call came in on a Sunday morning from the National Religious Broadcasters Association, and I thought, that ain't right. Sunday morning at 2:33 in the morning. So I got me a video camera on Monday, and I recorded the caller ID on two different phones, and I called him up while I'm talking to the guy. He said, hey, this is about you. We just got a system-wide email or voice message saying that our voicemail system was hacked, and we're working with Comcast to try to fix it. And that should have been national news. I mean, I'm sick of hearing about the Democratic National Committee's emails getting hacked. Here's somebody that hacked the entire National Religious Broadcaster System voicemail. Wow. I had left them a voicemail message back in January before, the Trump had that thing about all the conservatives being censored on Facebook and YouTube and Google, and I've got evidence for all that. I filled out a report about it and sent it off on Trump's webpage.
Listen, Mike, I'm down to the wire here, but look, nothing that these folks do, I am not surprised by anything they do. Let me make sure my grammar's correct here. I'm not surprised by anything they do because, here again, when you don't have the restraint of godliness in your life to kind of rein you in, then you just run amok. And that's exactly what we're seeing in our country today. That's why we don't need people in office who don't acknowledge God. Thank you for the call, Mike. Let's go to Caesar in Mississippi. Caesar, welcome.
Hey, Bishop. So I was thinking if some of the states that are the Democratic states are trying to push in the mail-in voting, if they don't get the count going by the time it's what, January is the deadline for everything.
Yeah. January 20th.
Yeah. And then the speaker becomes the president, the interim president, until the official count is done. What is your thoughts on that? Like, you know, that's why Hillary's telling Biden, don't concede, because that can be another avenue of trying to steal the election from the people that, you know, these states are holding up for the voting because of that.
Yeah, well, look, Caesar, according to the Constitution, I looked at this after a caller raised it. I think that is correct. I can't imagine that we're going to let it get that far. If it does, I think we are in trouble. I think that will precipitate a constitutional crisis. Do I think that they would do something like that? Yeah, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. And look, because folks, here's the difference. I would not cheat. As much as I want, personally, I want President Trump to win. Now, we're a nonprofit network. We don't give to political campaigns as a network. We don't endorse candidates. But I personally want President Trump to win. I would not cheat or lie to put him in office. I just don't believe God would bless that. But I don't think they have those compunctions. I think that all they care about is winning and power. And integrity just doesn't matter. So I don't think there's anything they wouldn't do. But I'm convinced of this. We cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Faith, family.